You're saying she has a 15% chance of recurrence, and I bring it back to the analogy of breast cancer. I mean, I'm not saying that erlotinib is the same as hormonal therapy, but in terms of serious side effects, I'm not sure it's that much different. The rash is a problem. But we certainly would be using hormonal therapy in a patient with a 15% chance of recurrence. Obviously, we have the data there. But Vince, what are you thinking in terms of why you wouldn't want to use it? Because of lack of supporting data?
I think the mindset probably of a lung cancer doctor is so different from a breast cancer doctor. And I hear think of somebody having an 88 or 85, aside from the fact we don't have the data. Because biologically, if she had a stage 2 cancer, I would have been jumping to take the pill. But I think when we can tell somebody they have an 80 or 85% cure, that's like the best patient we ever see in our practice. And so I think that's where it comes from. It is tougher to get through than hormones. It's not trivial, and a lot of the patients, it's probably whatever predisposes you to the mutation is some germline thing that also predisposes you to toxicity. So I think it is tougher. A lot of patients, we do have an adjuvant with mutations, and I do it. Depends on the, you know, what I think the likelihood of recurrence is, or down at 25 or 50 milligrams a day.
That raises another question. In looking at the adjuvant trials when I was thinking about her case, it was really hard to find trials that had anything but a handful of bronchoalveolar patients. I don't even know what exactly is the role, if any, of adjuvant chemotherapy in the bronchoalveolar population.
The problem is that we're just paying attention to histology and lung cancer again now after 15 years of time off from it. So when all the cooperative groups analyzed their databases in the late 80s, early 90s, there was never any difference for response or survival if you had squamous, large cell adeno. So one thing that came out of a meeting we did in New York was that the cooperative groups, I don't know if it's actually happened, were going to make an attempt to better annotate our pathology, particularly in trials of targeted therapies that may have a differential mechanism of action depending on what tumor type you have. So at the present time, you treat your bronchoalveolar like you would an adenocarcinoma of a given stage and do the best, you know, go by that.
Peter, I think you were at the think tank when I tried to bring up the analogy between TKIs and the enriched population, looking at mutations and non-smoking as a way to predict response to therapy compared to HER2 and Herceptin. And my tenet was actually the response rate in the enriched population for lung cancer is greater than with Herceptin. Do you agree with that?
What was the response rate in the enriched population again?
What number would you quote, Vince?
Oh, it's the pooled response rate's probably conservatively 70%.
For those who are
mutation
positive,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And what about in non-smokers?
In never smokers, the response rate is about 50%.
Okay, so you look at Herceptin as a single agent, it's not that high.
No, it compares with the estrogen receptor, actually, or even more powerfully.
This is not a benign drug. Remember, this is not tamoxifen. These patients get rash at a minimum. Many get diarrhea. They may have other problems. If you look at the BR21 trial, 5% had to discontinue therapy because of toxicity. I think in our clinical practices, it's probably a higher percentage, particularly in an East Asian population. Interstitial lung disease is not trivial. It doesn't seem to be operative, at least in North America. And if we look at an unselected population, and again, this is probably a flaw of the study, but in locally advanced disease, if you look at the SWOG study, which looked at etoposide platinum radiation followed by docetaxel and then randomization and maintenance gefitinib or observation, p-value was actually in the wrong direction. The gefitinib arm had an inferior survival. It wasn't significant, but it was heading there, 0.09. So outside of a study setting, I don't do it. Even in those who are, I think that's one area where Vince and I differ. I will not give it to a higher risk patient either. I have tremendous respect for the potential toxicities that this drug has, and we have zero randomized prospective phase 3 testing.
What serious toxicities are there besides the rash?
Diarrhea, which can sometimes really alter whether a patient's going to continue with the drug. The rash can get quite severe too, although I think most of us who have experience dealing with the rash have a number of strategies to mitigate it.
I think the hard part's to get them through the first month, but after that, most of the toxicities seem to attenuate.